Okay, so Chelsea, I think I'm going to go ahead and start our meeting, just do a few introductory remarks and talk about the agenda and our upcoming conference, and then I will pass the baton to you. So welcome to everyone for this for our call today. Just as a reminder, if you could please mute your line when you're not speaking, just that outside noise can be really distracting to the presenter. And as you heard, this call is being recorded. Today we've got a fabulous agenda. We're going to talk a little bit about our work group calls and goals, and just wanted to let, for people who haven't been on this call before, we have a fabulous leadership for this council, to include our facilitator today, Chelsea King. We also have Dr. David Bensema, who's the CIO of Baptist Health, and Jason Buckner, who's the Chief Vice President of Informatics at Health Collaborative. And they help to lead the direction of our work group, and I'll be talking a little bit about our conference and what we'll be doing there, and the role of this leadership group. So our speaker today is Doug Dietzman, who is the Executive Director of Great Lakes Health Connect. As I mentioned, we are having our conference October 4 and 5 in Washington, D.C. It's at a really cool place in Georgetown. It overlooks the Potomac, and so when you get a little sleepy in the middle of the day, you can go outside. It is just absolutely stunning, and take just standing by the Potomac, it's a lot of fun. But one thing that we're going to be doing is we're inviting all of our work groups to come to the conference and actually have an in-person meeting. You know, we live in such a virtual world that it's a nice opportunity when you can actually, sit side by side. What we want to do is we want to take a look at what we've done this year and what we can do in 2017. What should our goals be? What are some of the hot issues that are now coming and coming up that we really need to focus on? We would absolutely love to have your participation. So if you haven't registered for the conference, please do, and we'll be sending more information about our work group meetings at the conference. So this work group got started by as a result of the EHI 2020 roadmap. This was something that was developed by our members in 2014. And out of the roadmap came several different working groups to focus on these issues. We've got interoperability, business and clinical motivators, data access and use, which is more of the focus on privacy. And as it pertains to data, of course, our data analytics work. And then we also have privacy and security. And each of these are, by the end of the year, we're going to have a report, what we've been doing, what are some of the outcomes, and what we will be focusing on for the year of 2017. And, of course, would love to have your involvement. So this is just some key points that we're looking at, and these can be added on to. We can take a look at some of these and be creative. Do we need to do research? Do we need to think of very specific speakers to come and talk about some of these different issues? These work groups are really for your benefit. It is an EHI member event only for EHI members, I should say. So please utilize it to the most extent that you can. So on that note, I'm going to turn this over to Chelsea.
Thank you, Claudia, and good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining the data analytics work group call for this month. We have a really exciting speaker today, and what's really important, or one of the topics that the leadership of the data analytics group has identified as something that's important, is really trying to understand where data analytics can be important, where data is not really penetrating the healthcare continuum and where it needs to be. In a recent study done by Inovalon and Quest Diagnostics, it was found that about 65% of physicians surveyed said they don't have all of the information they need to really impact the care of their patients. And we saw even further that about 87% of health plan executives found that it was extremely important for physicians and for health plans to have access to all of a patient's medical records. So there's some really strong data out there that shows that sharing information, having data on patients, having data analytics shared across the healthcare continuum really can change the way healthcare is delivered in the U.S. And so today we have Doug Dietzman with us. Doug is the Executive Director for Great Lakes Health Connect and has over 25 years of experience in information technology leadership focused primarily in the healthcare and health insurance markets. Previously, Doug served as Executive Director of Michigan Health Connect and Manager of Community Physician Services for Spectrum Health. So join me in welcoming Doug, and Doug, I will pass it to you.
That's great. Thank you very much, Chelsea, and Claudia as well for inviting me to share a little bit from our experience here in Michigan with the group. I have appreciated my participation over the last number of years with EHI for my own learning journey and being able to participate in these sorts of events and gain from experience from all of you and others around the country. So it's I hope I can do my little part here to share a little bit that is helpful for those that have joined as well, and grateful for those that are on the phone giving up what I'm sure is a very busy time for all of us during our day. So as you can see from a discussion topic standpoint, I want to give you a little overview. We won't spend a lot of time on who we are, but I think who we are and what we're trying to do is relevant to understanding how we're approaching the topic of data. And I'll talk through kind of our view of data in that context, broadly speaking, and then we'll get into, as part of that, our analytics component and how we've are seeing the needs coming at us from the various stakeholders. And then after I kind of do that, we'll spend a little time just giving you a snapshot based on those needs. Here are the current capabilities we're putting in place, how we think we need to support the market based on what we're hearing and some perspectives as well on kind of where we think that is going. So those are the topics we'll address, and I'm sure we'll have plenty of time for Q&A and answering some of the specific questions that you may have. So prepare for those as well. Go to the next slide. So GLHC, Great Lakes Health Connect, was formed in July of 2014 with the merger of two health information exchanges that were sustainable and viable. So two ongoing businesses decided we were kind of trying to do the same thing. Why do it separately when we could do it better together? So Great Lakes Health Connect was formed when Michigan Health Connect and Great Lakes Health Information Exchange came together. I came from the Michigan Health Connect organization, which had started back in 2009 with competing health systems that said, you know what, this HIE thing is coming at us. We have in our missions to improve the health of the communities that we serve, and we're all in the same community. We can't do that if we're not sharing data. So let's agree not to compete on clinical data exchange, but figure out how to do the right thing before something is done to us. And so that was kind of the seed that has now grown into Great Lakes Health Connect. We have 129 of the hospitals in the state that's connected to us one way or the other. You can kind of see majority of those are below the bridge. So we have most of the activity there, about 85% of the acute care beds. We have most of the larger provider organizations in the state participating with us, 4,000 other sorts of offices. We've connected to community mental health, the post-acute care world, home health, local public health. We're working with a number of them around the state, and then the behavioral health and social service settings as well. And our referral platform, as an example, we have a food bank because they were finding that they needed to interact with the physician community for those that had specific nutritional issues. And so rather than phone and fax, we've connected them in. So we have a pretty broad view of what that ecosystem looks like. In our longitudinal record, we have about 6.5 million persons in the MPI right now on a monthly basis, processing what annually is a billion messages a year, so a lot of activity flowing through. And lastly there, too, we are privately sustainable. So we did not start with state or federal grant monies. We do not sustain ourselves today by any federal or state grant dollars or any other private grant dollars. We've done it from the beginning with the mindset that if we are going to if we're going to exist in the future and have a valuable place in the community, that we had better be able to provide services that the providers and other healthcare stakeholders are willing to pay for, or we shouldn't exist. And so we have, from the very beginning, tried to create the solutions based on needs, solving needs, helping provide services that advanced those stakeholder goals. And so our funding today is 100% driven by the membership or other solution fees that we get from our various participants. I guess the last thing I'll say here before we move on is there are other organizations in the state that have an HIE designation associated with them. Great Lakes is really the only organization in the state that was incorporated for and is in the business of community health information exchange. The other organizations are either a PO that does some integration work on the side, or a health system that is connected out to some of its providers from a health system perspective, other organizations kind of like that. But specific to pulling together the physical, behavioral, social service environment at a local level and building care-connected communities, we're really the only organization in the state that has that as its primary purpose in life every day. Go to the next one. So just to give you a sense for the types of things that we are doing, a lot of the typical HIE-related things from, you know, on the left side, how do we get folks connected? So we are a direct HISP for the hospitals that need a HISP to sit alongside, whether it's a Meditech or Epic customer. We also provide addresses out in the physician office to the extent that they need to be a receiver or want to be able to send those things and aren't getting them from their EMR vendor. We have a closed-loop referral network in the state that has over 1,200 offices connected that isn't just an electronic exchange of data, but is actually asynchronously keeping both sides of that referral process up to date with what's going on so that the loop can fully be closed. Get people connected, we need to start exchanging data, so the typical results delivery, lab ordering, radiology ordering solutions are live. We've got a lot of connectivity with the state, so immunization delivery, reportable labs, syndromic surveillance are all live. We've also just gone live with immunization query to be able to pull the data back out of the state registry and make that available inside the EMRs that our participants are using. Notifications is a big one around the country, and so we're doing that either based on the IDs that are part of the message or through subscription and kind of attribution-based service that we get through the state-designated entity, MyHIN, that operates at the state level. And then we have our virtual patient record, which is our longitudinal health record, where we are now organizing the data to be able to present a single patient view as individuals move around the community from provider to provider. And with that, we've added advanced care plans, working with two communities where they are actively engaged in trying to move that along. And so we are a repository and built a capability to upload those documents and set those alongside the clinical data. So wherever a patient shows up, their advanced care plans are there, the directives are there, so their wishes can be honored. And then further extended it to care plans and action plans. So pediatrician, for example, here in West Michigan, has kids on asthma plans. is posting those documents out into the exchange so that when their patients and when their kids show up to the emergency department, the ED docs know what the plan of care is and don't blow them up with a inhaler or something that requires them to have to kind of start over with the regimen. So we have those sorts of things going in as well. And then down the line, you see we've got then our the repository, operational reporting, and some of the other things that we're doing that we'll get into here shortly. Next. So I won't go through these, that you can, I'm sure the slides will be available. So just to give you a sense for volumes or what's live, these are some of the stats that we have and thought it might be interesting for folks. So that's available for you in the slides when you pull them down after. So let's go ahead and go to the next. So lastly, I just wanted to emphasize the point that as we're trying to develop our network, and this kind of gets into, again, the context for how we think about data. Data is a really broad term. Analytics is a really broad term. Population health, those are all really broad terms. And so we're trying to take those concepts and boil them into specifically what does that mean for us as an organization, based on what it means for our participants. And, you know, ultimately, we're trying to use data to tie this community, full community ecosystem together. It's not just about the primary care docs. It's not just about the hospitals. It's not just about any one of the stakeholders, but all of those stakeholders, particularly with more and more of the focus being put on integrating behavioral health with physical health and integrating the social determinants of health and the transportation and the housing, the nutrition and food assistance, educational services, community health workers that are going out into the communities and trying to engage in a certain way. All of these activities that are underway need to be tied together in order to provide the best possible care or management of wellness for the folks that are in our community. So that's the broad view that we come at it from. And every one of these organizations around the outside has their own strategy and mission for what they're trying to accomplish in their part of that healthcare ecosystem. And so our job, what we need to try and figure out how to do is to go into each one of those and understand what their strategies are, what their needs are, to help them be as effective as they can be performing their part. And as we do that in each one of those components around the circle, as a byproduct in the middle, kind of building this intelligent network that actually makes that data available. So that is easy to say. It is more challenging to do, but that's what we're devoted to and what we're working hard at. So let's get into kind of the aggregation needs then on the next slide and some of the things that we are seeing needed. So Great Lakes, we did not start in aggregating data, which I don't know if that sounds strange to some from an HIE perspective, but as we were getting started early on, much of the need we heard from our participants was there is all of a sudden all of these electronic medical record systems across the community, and we need to build interfaces to move this data from one place to another, but we don't have the time, skill, resource, tools. We don't want to do that. So here, let us give you our data, and then you, Great Lakes, figure out how to get that distributed down to each of the individual EMRs and practices that want that. So our first couple years, we're really focused on getting the data flowing, because if you don't have data coming to you, the notion of aggregation is a bit irrelevant. And so we focused our initial use cases on where the need was with these interfaces, but the byproduct and the cool thing that happened for us is it got large volumes of data starting to be moved in a way that was trusted and in a way that actually met needs, and the data became more liquid. And over time, the aggregation needs then have continued to grow. Some organizations have seemed to catch it faster than others. Some parts of the healthcare ecosystem have kind of caught on a little faster than others. But over time, whereas the exchange used to be focused on how can I pass something from one place to another, it really became a, well, what are we going to intelligently do with the data to solve some of these longstanding problems that we can't do just by passing it around? We have to locate it somewhere and then solve some of these problems in a different way. One of the things that we do have, though, is Great Lakes does have limits on what we can do with the data that our participants contribute. So with a with trust being a vital component of building our business as a nonprofit, we needed to make sure that we had early on that we're not going to do anything with your data as a business associate of yours that you don't tell us we can do. So we have no rights to take data from our participants and do anything else with it that they haven't specifically asked us to do. So when we talk about de-identification into research or other spaces, from a legal standpoint, we have some restrictions unless we kind of go back and get some of the explicit permission from our participants to make some of those things happen. There's also an interesting debate underway, and I referenced it a little bit, on models. There are a lot of models that are focused on the notion that if we can just pass the data back and forth to each other, if we can query from another vendor system or just send transactions up through some engine in the sky that's going to pass it down to somebody else, then we've really accomplished all of the needs from a health information exchange standpoint, or all the needs related to making sure the data is where it needs to be in the form and use of it that it needs to be, versus other models that are more geared toward actually aggregating the data, putting some intelligence kind of on top of that aggregation and doing some different things. They're not necessarily mutually exclusive. In fact, I would say they aren't really in reality because there's a need for both, but I think sometimes the marketing and some of the push out there would imply that they're more mutually exclusive, and if we can do one, then we're not going to need the other. And I think it's going to be interesting over the next couple of years to see how those things mature, what problems are truly solved by both models, and kind of where we end up as those things kind of sift themselves out as to what's meeting the need for the local physicians and provider organizations. And then the last point I'm make there on need standpoint, from my perspective, I believe we will be in a multi-stakeholder, multi-vendor environment forever. We will have conversations with some of our Epic customers who have perhaps the belief that if you have Epic, you need nothing else, and they will rule the world someday, and there's some equal zeal with some of the other vendors as well. I think even with as good as those vendors are and with as strong as they are in the categories that they work in, again, if you go back to my slide and talk about the other settings of care, the behavioral health integration, the social service integration, and all the different places data is going to be captured. Another example, one of our communities is Flint. So we have thousands of children now in that community that have been exposed to high levels of lead and are going to have to now be monitored over a period of time. Lead only stays in the blood for a very short period of time, but then it seeps into kind of the rest of the body, and what tends to come out over time, depending on the individual, is it becomes behavioral. It becomes cognitive sorts of deficiencies, which are probably going to be recognized in the schools and with the school nurses, and the assessment that need to be done to be tracking and monitoring those sorts of things in order to understand how this lead exposure may be affecting those children over some longer period of time. It extends well beyond what any one vendor can do. And so we're going to be capturing data in multiple systems across all these multiples of stakeholders kind of forever. And I believe then that there's going to be a need. I don't think standards, ultimately, as good as they are in easing the process, will never create the environment where there is no need for trusted organizations to help facilitate the workflows and process for how all of this gets pulled together in a way that actually advances things very specifically in each community for its citizens. Next slide. So, specific data needs. I'm going to slice this a couple different ways. Again, data is a big topic. I tend to try and simplify things for my own brain, if possible, so I can understand them. And so this is the way I have kind of broken these things down to represent the different needs that our community and folks that we work with are asking for it. When Chelsea mentioned the 65% of providers or physicians that say they don't have all the information they need, that's an important, and we hear a lot of that as well. Generally speaking, I think where what we find interesting is what type of data solves that problem for them. What does not having it mean? For some, it might mean it's a longitudinal record that they can find out what happened in places that they aren't aware of, hospitals that they maybe don't participate with regularly, but their patient showed up there. For others, it might be, I need that data in my EMR. I want that data transferred from these various places, you know, directly into my electronic record. And so the answer to the question as to what does having access to that data really mean is an important distinction. And these are some of the distinctions we see. So we do see that from a data standpoint, real-time delivery is something that's necessary. And so we have to think about how we organize our technology infrastructure and organize our data in a way to be able to deliver these things in real time to clinicians. That's event notifications, what's happening, and knowing intelligently when to tap somebody on the shoulder and do so in a way that gives them enough information to know what's happening but not bombard them with enough information that it becomes overwhelming and you can't see the important taps from all of the annoying taps, certainly an area that we're working hard on. Results delivery, orders, image exchange, and how we do that, there are those components that we have to think about and how we deliver that way. Another way that we have to think about data and organize it is around that longitudinal patient record for treatment and operational purposes. So this is Doug showing up to the emergency room at a facility when I'm on the other side of the state watching a ball game that I don't typically go to, and they don't know who I am. But because they're connected to our statewide network, have access to longitudinal record that my home hospitals that I go to more regularly or other providers are contributing to, now that emergency department has some perspective on what's happening to me. We had a summit here in West Michigan. We have kind of day-long summits in different communities around the state to bring people in that community together to talk about what all this means specific to their community. But our keynote speaker was a woman by the name of Dr. Kara Poland. And she manages the Center for Integrative Medicine in Grand Rapids, which is a center or clinic focused specifically on working with the super utilizer, very complex patients in the communities. A lot of visits to the emergency department, a lot of behavioral health, substance abuse, addiction sorts of issues that are typically involved there. And she just loves it. And with her population, they go lots of different places. And as she talked about the value of this longitudinal record for her, she brought up one patient of hers, a woman who was coming in to see the doctor and then pulled up her record to kind of prepare, and saw that in the previous week, that individual had been to all three emergency rooms in town on three successive days and had a CT scan at all three places on those days. And when the patient came in, didn't offer that information up, but she was able to engage her with the fact that she now knew that, you know, this was happening because the woman wanted to be referred on to have other testing done or to have another CT scan. And she said, you know what, you've had three in the last week. I think we're pretty sure that you're okay at this point, and could take kind of another tack to the conversation. But how incredibly challenging for that woman, or what a bad thing for her to be able to have that much radiation, to have duplicated that service. And the need, while it was helpful for Dr. Poland to have a conversation and take it in the right direction, we're continuing to push to figure out how we get these tools used within the hospital facilities so that we catch that right away. We don't do three of them in a row because it's not good for anybody. And it's the longitudinal record that does it. Those hospitals had access to other query tools to be able to query the other hospitals and see what might be there using standards. But if you don't know to look, then the fact that you can query doesn't do much for you. So that's the other way that we're organizing, or that we see the need to work with data. The third there is a longitudinal record, but specifically for population health purposes. So this data needs to be organized now more along the lines of the analytics or reporting that organized in a way that we can start asking questions across populations. So where is our risk? How are we stratifying that risk? Where are there gaps, referral patterns? We're going to have to produce increasingly more and more quality and value-based measures off of the clinical data that we're collecting. So we need to organize it not just for what happens when Doug walks in, but we have to organize the data in a way that we can report and show how what we've done with Doug is helping him overall meet where he needs to be and in the broad population of those that are like him. The other challenge with this that I think we're finding is that data used to be reported, and you could get away with doing most of that just out of your own electronic health record or the systems that were in the four walls of your practice. Increasingly, these measures and this data has to be organized across legal entities, across provider organizations that are either working in a particular ACO or other clinically integrated network. Maybe it's organizations that have come together to put a product on the state insurance exchange, or have banded together to say we will take risk or we will take incentives from commercial or the state through, you know, Medicaid payment. But they're not aligned. They're not on the same systems, but they have to look like they are aligned clinically and then be able to report clinically how they're doing. So that has become more of a challenge and a need from our participants, not just what they need to do internal to themselves, but where do they put the data that they can actually combine it with a whole bunch of others that they might be working with to take care of this. The next one there is a longitudinal record for research. We have conversations with Michigan State, who are one of our participants, and University of Michigan, and others who are interested in leveraging this data to be able to either follow specific patient cohorts over a period of time in order to understand from a practical research perspective what the impact of certain things are that they might be working on or trying, as well as the longer, bigger research efforts that are looking at big buckets of data, you know, across time to see where there might be places for improvement or show how things are being done. Again, that issue of data ownership and what we can do with the data comes into play there, but it's another way we have to organize the data. It's not the same as the others. That the last point I've got there is the same basic data set those inbound interfaces, the data that we're getting from the participants is it's essentially the same across all of these different scenarios, but what's different is the way that the data has to be prepared, presented, the tools it might need to be in, how it needs to be organized to actually meet the specific needs of that, which makes our expense, I guess, standpoint or the number of tools that we need to have, how we need to meet all of these various needs, particularly challenging as a small organization, small nonprofit, trying to figure out how we move it forward. But these are the places that we think we need to go. And then that last one is, you know, the operational business statistics. So as things are moving around, what is moving around? What are the numbers overall? What's being pushed where? By who? But then also being able to do that by customer, because they want to know from us how what are you doing on our behalf? How much are you transacting for us? Or we just had a conversation yesterday with a customer in one part of the state related to that longitudinal record for treatment purposes, our VIPER record, where we were showing how many of their people that had a medical record number from that organization had a medical record number associated with those folks from others. So in other words, what's the overlap between theirs? Are they contributing data and it's just their people that are there, or is the 450,000 people that they've contributed to this point have an overlap of a significant variety with other organizations to say that, you know what, there's more data out there than just what you have that maybe you need to know about? Those are the types of statistics and the ways we need to organize the data as well. Next slide, please. So that was, last one was on the data and the different ways we need to slice the data. This are different ways that we need to think about it from an organizational standpoint. I call it an organizational slice. So we have enterprises, whether that's a specific health system or a provider organization, some network, a health plan, they each have their own needs to support what's important and what the mission is for that particular organization. So we have to think through solutions and how we organize the data in a way that meets those specific enterprise needs. Another that are becoming much more prevalent are these multi-enterprise organizations. So maybe there's an all-out acquisition, buying another facility that's on a different system and the need to integrate that stuff. That's the consolidation is continuing to happen, but there's also affiliations or these joint ventures or these clinically integrated networks where organizations that have no intent of aligning themselves from a legal standpoint are aligning themselves in contracting from a clinical network perspective in a way that says in order to deliver on those contractual requirements, they need to look like they are clinically integrated, report on the fact that they are clinically integrated when in fact in the background they may have and will have their own separate systems that they had built kind of from an enterprise view. So we have those organizations coming to us wondering how, as an exchange, we can pull stuff together for them in a way that allows them to achieve their goals kind of in this multi-enterprise space. And then the last one there is we're being engaged by communities to say, how do we, now that we've got this data moving, how do we do things differently at a community level to advance the health indicators or to improve the health of the citizens that are in this particular community? One conversation that we're having is around, again, kind of the super utilizers. We have a community here that has three hospitals in it, and if you ask who is super utilizing the emergency departments, each one of those facilities can give you a list of folks who may have come 10 or more times in the last year. But understanding who the folks are that have hit one of the three EDs 10 or more times in the last year, best case, you can go to a payer if that individual happened to be and stay within a single health plan product. but often they're not and they don't. And so what we have is the ability now with the data coming in to say, well, let's create that report. Who are the folks that are hitting, not just maybe 10 times in the last year, but maybe it's 3 times in the last month, 2 times in the last week? What are the requirements that we want to define? And then as a community, in real time, every morning, let's manage that list. If we can start at the top and say, is this person part of a medical home? And if not, get them plugged in. If they are, can we reach out to the medical home and say, do you need any other supports? How can we help you with this individual who's seemingly hitting the emergency room, more frequently? And do the things at a person-by-person level that ideally we get to a point where we run that report every morning and nobody's on the list. It's a unique opportunity at a community level, combining the resources of the providers that are in that community to make a very real, tangible impact if we can structure the data, organize the data in a way that supports that. We're also creating a different scenario. We're also creating some reports in Flint related to lead exposure. And that's just one example of other things that the community might want to monitor themselves in real time rather than depending on traditional or historical syndromic sorts of things. If the data is moving through and we want to be keeping tabs as a community ourselves to make sure that we're getting on things as quickly as we can, how do we do that? How do we organize it in a way that allows us to do that surveillance or look at readmissions kind of in a different way? So in addition to the different data needs and how it needs to be organized, this is the organizational slice that goes across those as well, that the enterprises or multi-enterprises or the communities overall are all coming to us asking for ways to help them. And in each slice or each intersection, I guess, is a unique component that we're trying to figure out and say, what are the tools we need and how do we best do it? So on the next slide, these are the pieces that we've kind of put in place overall. We've been the Medicity customer for a long time. In the last couple of years, we've added an InterSystems engine as well to do some things that are outside of what Medicity specifically focused on. So those are kind of our two main platforms that move the data around. Medicity is our virtual integrated patient record. That's kind of that longitudinal record for treatment purposes as folks move around. And we're populating that and getting more and more organizations, particularly in the post-acute or ambulatory, really trying to ramp up that so that we round it out with more than just the inpatient data. And then the other piece that we've put in place, we're calling our community analytics platform. So in addition to putting the data kind of in that VIPR record, we're also putting the same data in a repository. Right now we're leveraging IMAT or Perfect Search for that activity that gives us the ability to organize it in a way that we can run reports and do the type of analytics I was talking about before relative to super utilizers or some of that other reporting. In addition, it has natural language processing on the ingest so that we can take the radiology reports, the discharge summaries, other text-based reports that in traditional registries aren't of much value because you can't get at the embedded clinical data in the report. Running it through the NLP, we can extract more of that out and make it available for different types of reporting. And to give you one example of what that looks like, in Flint, I mentioned the kind of lead test report, which we built just looking at what are the lab codes specific to lab testing, and let's look at who has values above a certain level, and we can kind of keep track of that. The other report that we developed was something that said, what are the symptoms of lead poisoning? Because lead stays in the blood for such a short period of time, somebody may not have been tested, and it may not show up in a blood test. But what, according to the science, are the symptoms associated with it? And then how can we create algorithms with a certain risk score that across the data that we're ingesting and applying the natural language process to can look for those sorts of symptoms and then apply a risk score to a particular individual that might suggest that they're suffering from some of the effects of it, even if it's not in a particular blood test. And I'll say, you know, we have more work to do to fine-tune that and to make it something that is clinically relevant right now. But we put the frame together, and that's running today. And I think that's the other element of using that platform with IMET to figure out how we organize the data in a way that allows us to ask those sorts of questions, not just there in Flint, but in all of our communities across the state. So last thing before I'm done and open it up if there are any questions, there are a couple perspectives. You heard it today, and hopefully some of this, I didn't give a lot of answers. I certainly feel like we're on the beginning stages of figuring all this stuff out, and it seems like every time I think I'm catching a clue, the earth moves again and things change, and we're just constantly in a state of trying to keep up with where the industry and business is going. But from a specific perspective, I think we need to make sure that we're talking about data and analytics within a context to know what solution is required. Sometimes we talk about big data as big data is the answer. Big data is cool, but for some of the specific use cases that we defined and needs for the data, we don't need big data for some of that. We just need very tangible, very specific data that if we thought it through and knew the right questions to ask, we wouldn't need a lot of data and we could, you know, kind of add a lot of value. So I don't know that there's one thing out there in this world that solves all of the problems. And certainly, going to that second point, certainly pulling the data together is a challenge. As an HIE, with all of the different systems, different coding schemes, all the complexity out there associated with trying to pull this data together, there's no question that that's a challenge. But I think to us as an industry, I might argue that the greater challenge is for us to get better at asking the right kinds of questions that gets us to things that can actually move the needle and make a difference. There's lots of stuff that's cool to look at. There's lots of ways to pull data together in ways that's just fun to play with. But I think if we want to make a lasting difference and really do something, if we get really, really good at asking the right questions and then collecting the data that specifically supports the answer to those questions, then I think we'll be in a great spot. And ultimately, I have no idea really where the specifics of the business of medicine or the clinical practice of medicine is ultimately going to shake itself out and land. But the only thing I know for sure is that we will be in a multi-vendor, multi-stakeholder environment, and there's going to be a need to be able to pull all this data together in a way that's coherent and can be used. And so we're focused on providing that base and then letting the business and the clinical models kind of go where they need to go, not getting locked into any one of those, but getting locked into kind of this base support from a data standpoint that can pull it together, get it where it needs to go, and then organize it for these different slices for folks to look at and view. And with that, Chelsea, I will stop and see if there are any questions.
Thanks, Doug. Claudia, I don't know if the line is open for everyone, if folks have questions for which they would like to ask.
Sure. Chelsea, if I'm being the facilitator, if you'd like to ask the first question, or I can go ahead and go into the chat and get questions from there.
Sure. So I actually do have a question for you, Doug, and you might have covered it, and I could have missed it, but can you talk us through how patient consent to share this data works for GLHC?
Yeah, so we if we think about health information exchange at the macro level as to having two big halves, one, the half that we push data around, and then the half where we query data. In the first, patient consent really isn't changed at all in how we push the data around because it just mimics what's happening today. We don't ask if it's okay if we courier it or fax it or put it on a pigeon and send it out the window or something. The method of delivery, we don't say, but when somebody's sending something from one place to another, the same consent model applies within the exchange. As long as the person sending it knows they have the consent and it's appropriate, they're leveraging the exchange. Nothing's really different there. When we get into the query-based world, though, where we're putting data in the middle and then allowing folks, based on their assertion that they have a treatment or operating relationship with the patient where it's okay to see it, that's where we run into more of the consent issue. So overall, Michigan's opt-in, or I'm sorry, an opt-out state. So we put the data in. If they want to opt out, individuals can come to us, and we will make sure that we do that for them. And then we get into the complexities of the behavioral health and substance abuse world, where today we don't really put any of that data in that longitudinal record for treatment purposes, because there aren't just good structures in place based on Michigan law to be able to effectively make sure that nothing wrong is done with it, or that we can comply with law. So today we just keep that part out and hope that either the legal structures or cultural structures will change so that it allows it and makes it easier to integrate that stuff together.
Perfect. Makes sense. Makes clear sense to me, especially on the behavioral and mental health side. Claudia, do you want to see if there's a question from the group?
Sure. So one question, there are several questions. One question is, and actually this is from our other council leader, Dr. David Bensema. He says, you mentioned the need to not see big data as the answer, but need to know how to use it. Any tips on managing C-suite and board expectations as they are enamored with the cool? I like that.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. Being a part of different organizations, the personalities specific to each board are obviously unique, and so it's interesting to kind of understand the room and see where they need to go. I think, though, that the boards, my thought would be where I'd try and go with that is the boards are come together because they want to do something meaningful. They're invested in the organization because they want to make a change. They want to see certain things happen. And we see this even as we're talking to the leadership of our different participants. If we can't translate what we do very tangibly into how it helps them achieve their mission and what they're trying to accomplish, then they see no relevance for us, even if the stuff that we have is cool. I think there's a corollary to the question in the board. I'm just a big fan of being as tangible and as real as we can possibly be. And so if we want to pull the data together, that's great. And if there's enamorment with, you know, kind of that shiny object, that's good. But for all the effort and cost to do it, what are we going to do once we have it so that we're actually affecting the mission and what the board wants to do? And so I always try and push for as tangible definition of that as I possibly can.
Thank you. I hear from other exchanges, not specific to the board, but just clearly you've done an amazing job with establishing a value proposition to have this, you know, this significant membership, because there are a lot of exchanges that are really struggling and, you know, they don't have what you have.
Yeah, we've worked pretty hard. I think that has been interesting to me as well over the years as I've watched kind of my peers in my industry, you know, kind of group here. And I think the only thought I've had is since we didn't take or get money from anywhere else, we had to be very scrappy and we had to meet specific needs. I think sometimes having a big pot of money to go spend sometimes can put you in a position of spending the money to go do stuff that when you turn around maybe isn't exactly what the folks that you need to support you needed you to do or wanted you to do or adds the most kind of value. So I think in one sense, while it would have been nice to have millions of dollars to use, I think the fact we didn't forced us to be really, really good and diligent with how we approach the market.
So I know that there are other people with questions. So what did you start off with?
From a business model standpoint?
Yes. What was your first exchange?
Well, it was really around results delivery. It was hospitals having 50 offices that all want an interface right now into their new EMR that they just built in order to satisfy meaningful use, and they didn't have the wherewithal for a variety of different things to make it happen. So we built the initial integrations were for the hospitals to give us all of the result data, and then we on their behalf worked with all the individual offices to build that connectivity and help them satisfy meaningful use, getting immunizations to the state of Michigan, syndromic surveillance, reportable labs, those sorts of things that were the practical, these are the things we have to get done because there's money on the line or there are strategic efforts on the line. And then, as I said, as that data started to move, it gave us the ability to say, well, what if we did this with it now that we had it? And that allowed us to extend our use cases into other places that were easier because we already had the data moving.
That is very interesting. Well, another question. What was the timeline from the initial data aggregation to your current standing?
We started in 2009, as I said, with the predecessor organization, really incorporated March 2010, started in the push world. We did start to aggregate a little bit. We had a couple organizations that were the early adopters. So we probably started in 2011, starting to ingest data into that VIPR longitudinal health record, starting to aggregate it for that purpose, and have continued to add more and more. It's been an interesting thing in that nobody argues with the philosophy, and even in the survey that Chelsea mentioned, everybody says they need access to more data. But as we've gone out and said, okay, we have a master person index and we have the infrastructure and we're ready for you to add your data so that you can get access to this longitudinal record, there's been a lot of scratching of heads going, well, how does this affect our bottom line and what does this mean relative to, you know, our strategies and other things? And it just hasn't been maybe as much of a, this is cool, this is what we've been waiting for, how can we participate sort of a mindset as I would have expected. So we got started kind of back in the 2011 timeframe. We've been adding hospitals today. I think we've got about 60 of the facilities across the state that are contributing data to it, about 8 million clinical messages a month going into that specific repository, a bunch of other data going out to other places that may not be going there, and we're adding the other long-term and ambulatory settings now as well. And expect we're on a journey that will probably take us really a while. One of the interesting things I think that we're doing is we're working with one of the health plans here in the state to take their outpatient claim file, not for the financials, but just for the touch points in the community. We're going to turn those claims into something that looks like an ADT message and then pump those ADT messages into the health record just like any other event notification or ADT, so that while it may take us many years to get to all of the EMR systems that are out there to get the raw clinical data out, the health plan has the broadest view to all the touch points a person has had with that broad community. At least we'll know and be able to communicate where people have been while we go through the effort over some period of time to get all the back end clinical data that supports that. And I think that will help us leapfrog things a little bit too.
Well, we have time for one very quick question, last question. What other HIEs are you collaborating with?
I sit on the board of the Strategic Health Information Exchange Collaborative, or SHEIC. And so that is a group of about 40 or so HIE networks from around the country. SHEIC is a trade association of health information exchange organizations like us. So we're collaborating on a national level, kind of with them, and have some ideas about how technically we're going to connect our networks so that we can extend ourselves beyond just our Michigan network into supporting folks who may be vacation in Arizona or other things like that. And then we've also got, separately, we've got relationships with our neighboring HIEs. I've got a good relationship with the folks in Ohio, Michiana down in South Bend, the folks at IHI, down there in Indiana, and so we're collaborating kind of with our regional partners and those folks that are jumping back and forth across our borders on a regular basis.
That is awesome. Well, I know our time is up. Chelsea, do you have any last words before we sign off?
Do not. I just want to thank Doug for his presentation, as well as all of those out there who are involved in HIEs and other platforms that are sharing patient data to improve care. It's an important activity. It is one that is yet evolving, but one that we have to get right in order to really improve the way care is delivered.
What a great ending. Thank you. Well, I want to thank Chelsea, our facilitator, and Doug, the speaker. Thank you so much for your time and expertise on this, and thanks all that participated on the call. And we look forward to you on next month, hopefully our conference. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.